dripping and roasting. Yeah, that's what we do. Set them up, knock them down, make that cherry glow. Whiskey and cigars, the gentleman's cologne.
Cheers, y'all.
That's the beginning of a party, ladies and gentlemen.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this fine radio program, podcast, and video extravaganza known internationally as the world famous Smoking and Toasting. Our program is all about craft beer, fine spirits, and hand-rolled cigars, and we are up to show number 370. That's 370.
Right. No, I was marking down the math on that, and that brings us exactly halfway to 400.
Good to know. Thank you for
That's not how that works.
It's quantum math.
I appreciate it. It's, what did George Bush call
it? You think you're fuzzy all smart because you can read.
Fuzzy math.
Math isn't reading, buddy.
Smoking and Toasting comes to you from the fourth largest city in the United States of America, Houston, Texas. We are also one of fastest growing cities in the United States. And yet, even though all of that is true, and even though Houston is a wonderful cultural melting pot with if you're a foodie, this is a great city for you. And we have great breweries and distilleries that call Houston home. And yet, we are often overlooked when people think about breweries and distilleries and things like that in Texas. Often Austin gets a lot of attention. And I'm not saying that Austin doesn't have some very good breweries in it. They do. But generally speaking, if the national press or the statewide press decides to venture from Austin, they generally go to Dallas for some reason. I don't know if it's the Dallas Cowboys. I have no idea why. But Dallas seems to be number two. And yet, I've spent a lot of time in Dallas. I've spent a lot of time in Austin. I will take Houston's brewing scene over either of those two cities. Woo. And not just because I live here. So that's why it is with great local pride that I introduced today's guest, who has been on the program before. He's a friend of the show. But not only that, his brewery, True Anomaly Brewing, has been named for the second consecutive year the best brewery in Texas, or the brewery of the year. True Anomaly, congratulations, Duckworth.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me on.
That's huge, because not only are you obviously competing with all the other Houston brewers and you know all the other brewers in Texas, but you're also competing against that sort of Austin bias.
We got to bring Houston some love, and obviously we've been very proud to do that last year, this year, obviously years before that, brewing beer as well. Giving Houston a little clout, I think,
it's quite an honor.
So
we are thrilled to have you. I know you brought some goodies. I took a peek at some of them before the show started. I'm very excited to get to some of the things that you have brought that we will be tasting on the program today.
Excellent.
So it's going to be exciting. And Ian, you brought along today's spirit, which I understand is a 10-year bottled and bond bourbon from Henry McKenna.
Yes. And I'm looking forward to that. I have not opened this yet.
I was going to say I'm sensing OSHA violations all over the place.
Yeah. I'll do the opening on this, so you don't have to worry about getting cut by the foil or any spillage from not clearing the neck.
That little thing that loops over the top, that can be very dangerous to a person's fingers.
Yeah. That's okay. I have tools to get past these kind of things.
It's good to know. We look forward to that, and we look forward to also talking on today's show about the 30 best bourbons for 2024, brand new list that has been released.
I like bourbon.
And we will talk about that, and we will debate that, and we'll enjoy doing all of that. Beers, as I said, from True Anomaly Brewing, so that already makes the show awesome.
Yes.
And then we'll look forward to also our running feature here, our running feature on the program, which has become popular beyond, I don't know, any reasonable reason, and that is drinking news. And we do have our drinking news teaser headline for you today. It is TMZ meets Showgirls meets Game of Thrones.
I have no idea what that means.
No.
And lost. When you find out, you'll still be just as lost.
just as mystified.
Yep. So Michael Duckworth is here. We've got some cigars to watch for to tell you about. A list from experts who picked the best cigar cutters. So we'll try to get to that a little bit later here on the program. And so many things going on, including what we now call, we used to call it the mystery beverage.
Beverage of mystery.
It is now called the beverage of mystery. And today's has been brought in. Today's has been brought in by Ian. And the thing about the beverage of mystery is that only the person who brought it in knows what it is. So the rest of us are doing this totally blind taste test, totally sight unseen.
Didn't smell like what I thought it was going to smell like.
what on earth did you think it was going
to
smell like?
I don't know, but it's got kind of a butterscotch to it or
every
something?
Time Ian brings in the beverage of mystery, I prepare to be assaulted with some Malort-like substance. Yeah. And if you think that that's unfair, please understand he has totally earned that lack of trust.
Come on, man. I only Malorted you twice.
Yeah. Fool me once. Shame on me.
I'm going to point out that our guest has now taken more than one sip.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know the rules. Well, we just were drinking.
No. You're more than welcome to. I'm just saying that obviously it's not bad.
Well, Terry is right. It has a bit of a butterscotch on the nose, a little bit of. I mean, I'm cheating a little bit here because I know you. I don't know what this is, but I know you, and I'm guessing this is a barley wine.
Have you tried it yet?
I haven't tasted it yet. That's just from the nose.
Wait till you try it, sir.
Wow.
It's different than what you're thinking. It is.
It is. It doesn't have that thicker mouthfeel than I'm used to with barley wine, but the flavors are very barley wine-ish.
Can be-ish. Are you ready for the reveal? You want to take any guesses?
Any other style, anything?
Yeah. Let's see. Michael, anything?
I get a little molasses.
Yeah?
Clearly it's thick. It's got to be, 14%?
Can I give you a hint? There's some orange peel.
Oh.
Mmm.
Go retro hell with that. You'll pick it up.
Yeah. I still don't know what it is, though. Ready for the reveal? It is
old-fashioned inspired.
Guinness.
Wow.
Old-fashioned inspired ale.
Wow. That is a Guinness product.
Yes.
What's the ABV on this thing?
A lot.
A lot.
10.8.
Yeah.
10.8. Come on. Yeah, we've seen better.
So that's like
it's freaking delicious.
That's still like several Guinnesses. Or is it Guinness? I don't know. What is Guinness, the plural?
No, I think that gets racist.
No, I think that does.
Yeah. A little close.
Yeah.
Ale aged in Kentucky bourbon barrels with orange and cherry.
Well, you can definitely get the bourbon barrel aging to it, but
oddly enough, it is a bit barley wine like.
It does remind me of a barley wine,
and it's freaking delicious.
And this is something available, obviously, retail. You bought this at a
we were at Specs the other night, and my wife saw it, and she goes, "Oh, we have to try that." And I was like, "Well, we have to save one."
Yeah. Well, just buy a case then.
This is a wonderful beverage of mystery.
Beverage of mystery.
Yeah, no, this is a good one, and so.
Thanks for not screwing me over, Ian.
With every good one that you bring in, you tick one step closer.
I've only brought two bad ones in.
To credibility. Yeah, I know, but they were really bad.
It's amazing how many good ones you have to bring in to redeem you only remember the bad of that.
You only remember the and in my defense, the two bad ones were the same thing. You fell for it twice.
Yeah.
Well, you fell. It's your fault.
I gaslighted him?
I was malorted twice. It's embarrassing.
Oh, man.
It's embarrassing.
It's your own personal rickroll that he's got going for you.
What are you going to do? Oh, my gosh.
We'll bring in some wort next time.
Well, I am assuming that in addition to tracking down this fine beverage, you also might have had the opportunity to smoke something interesting this
week.
Would
that
be right?
It's funny you should ask.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I generally do.
I finally caught up with something I said I was going to do weeks back when you did a review on the Room 101 farce.
Mm-hmm. That's been quite a while back that I did the farce.
That's like a month ago.
Yeah.
Something like that. But that's only 4 episodes, you know.
Okay.
So it hasn't been that long. Maybe. I don't know. I just remembered that I had to do this. Anyway, I didn't put down what the wrapper binder and filler was because my internet was not working. What is it about cigar shops? When you walk in, it's like a black hole of internet and radio service.
It was like the first show in January, by the way.
Okay, a month, three, whatever. Yeah,
so you're right. You're right. I'm just confirming. What were you saying about the black hole of internet?
It's a, anytime you walk into a cigar shop, like it doesn't matter. You could be sitting outside of a cigar shop. It's like a black hole of internet and radio silencer. Anyway, the appearance on this medium brown wrapper, oily and smooth, very firm feel, has two bands on it. It has the Forest band underneath the Room 101 band. And then the pre-light sniff on this rich earth and candy sweetness, dark fruit and fermented tobacco. I used a V-cut on this.
I need a good V-cutter.
We were talking about accessories. The other night, I bought a V-cutter. Hold on. Look how cool this thing is.
I'm really interested to see it because I'm really in the market for one.
It's part of a lighter.
Ooh.
You just go, boop.
So you're into that multi-purpose.
I like having that all-in-one thing.
Multi-tool.
Yeah, multi-tool. So, yes,
part of my Lotus lighter has a V-cutter built in. They also had another one that had just a regular cutter in it, but I went for the V-cut. Anyway, so I used the V-cut. Had a medium draw, sweet, creamy, taffy, dark fruit, and rich earth is what I got right off of the pre-light sniff on this. The initial light, Nicaraguan pepper hug. It was not really a blast. It was a hug.
A hug is all right, yeah.
Yes, followed by nutty and campfire notes. Retrohale is black pepper with a touch of sweetness. The first third of the sweet and fruity notes lead the charge, backed by massive black pepper and cedar notes. Retrohale is peppery and cedar with a touch of sweetness. Solid ash, good burn. The second third of this comes in. Pepper settles into a spicy background with tons of cedar and sweet candy or sugar note. Mm-hmm. An underlying creaminess ties the spicy and sweet together. Earthy and fruity notes weave in and out. Retrohale is peppery and cedar with a touch of sweetness. Solid ash, uneven burn. It started to canoe a little bit here.
Not good.
So I touched it up. Cedar takes center stage with the last third of this with sweet and creamy notes right behind. Pepper remains consistent. The burn has evened out by this point in time. The retrohale is peppery and cedar with a touch of sweetness. Solid ash, good burn.
Nice.
At $12.59 for the Robusto, I love the flavors in this. It was great. I give it a solid 5.
Nice.
Even having to touch it up, no problems.
Even having to touch it up and it being, you know, over $12. That's not bad.
That's a very good cigar.
Awesome. Well, we'll get to my cigar for this week coming up in one of the next segments here, the next segment, most likely. And we'll also talk to you about, Ian just got this new cutter. I found this interesting article from themanual.com. Not Emmanuel, but the manual. The 9 best cigar cutters in 2024, tested and chosen by experts. And they kind of like... lay them out by style, right? So they say, if you want a capable V-style cutter, they recommend the Calibre V-Cut. And I do like Calibre's cutters. I'm not a big fan of their lighters because they go out bad. And the used
no,
to be
the mechanicals just, are good, but the flammables not so much.
Used to be you could just take them back to the cigar store and they'd give you a new one. Now you have to send it in and wait. So if you're looking for a remarkably straight, clean cut, they recommend the Lotus Jaws serrated cigar cutter. And I don't think I've seen one of those, so I'm going to be on the lookout.
Know that one.
On the lookout for one. If you want to save some money without sacrificing reliability, which is easy for me to say, the Palio Composite Cigar Cutter. So remember those. You can find this article, by the way, at themanual.com, and they have links to each of these cutters, so you can go and look at them and see what they're all about. So if you want to turn some heads, the ST DuPont Linea Maestra Particus Gold Cutter, which I imagine is going to be pretty
expensive. You owe him $50 for saying that.
Yeah, and I'm going to owe him $100 now because the ST DuPont Keychain Punch Cigar Cutter is a stylish punch that they recommend. And then there's the Vertigo Big Kahuna Cutter if you want to cut huge, like 70 to 80 ring gauge cigars. The Zycar 9mm Pullout Punch if you want a reasonably priced punch cutter. And the Zycar MTX Multi-Tool Cigar Scissors, which I have those. I've given you those as a gift before. If you want extras with your cutter. And finally, the Zycar XO Double Guillotine Cigar Cutter if you want a double guillotine. Now, I'm going to mention this just because I happen to have this one with me. this to me is the best punch cutter on the market. And this one's a little faded, and Ian has actually sharpened this one for me because I use it so much. I got it a little bit dull, but it unscrews on both sides and you have a larger larger hole punch there.
Oh, yeah, that doubles.
Yeah, see, that's what I'm talking about.
I was jealous on yours and you got me one.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So we recommend this one pretty highly. And we're going to take a break. More recommendations coming up for you. And excitedly, some beers from True Anomaly Brewing.
Oh, beer.
Award-winning brewery in Texas. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Smokin' and Toastin', our program all about craft beer, fine spirits, and hand-rolled cigars. We're on show number 370, and I only say this because I know it pisses one guy off. No one has stepped in to stop us.
No one has stopped
us. Yeah, I just know it makes that guy mad.
Unbeatable.
And I bet he's still listening all these episodes later just to see if we, like, you know.
I think you read that within the first 50 episodes.
I think it was. It was very early on. Yeah, yeah.
I've never read a review of our show.
He said one thing I didn't agree with. Well, that was the only one I read. I read that, and I was like, I'm not reading anymore. Yeah. But he said one thing I agree with and one thing I disagree with. The thing I disagree with was that, you know, the whole thing about nobody's tried to stop us. Well, that's true. No one has tried to stop us. I'm pretty sure that if they had, we wouldn't be here anymore.
Yeah. Right.
But the thing he said that I agree with was when he described how we would have on Chris Hart and Alan Denny, and he said, nobody cares about those guys. I agree with him there. I agree with him. I smoked something pretty interesting this week. I smoked the Grey Cliff West Hill Street Torpedo. Now, I don't smoke Grey Cliff cigars very often for the same reason I don't smoke Opus X very often. Usually they're pretty good, but they also seem to usually be a little overpriced. So, but I got one of these in a sampler recently, and so I thought I would share the smoking experience with you guys today. The Grey Cliff West Hill Street Torpedo. Now, there's a very famous and fancy old school hotel in Nassau in the Bahamas called the Grey Cliff Inn. And it happens to be located on West Hill Street. So this is where this naming comes from. It was built in 1844. It's a small 14-room hotel that is revered by wealthy upper-crust society types who are looking for a luxurious escape. The folks at Grey Cliff Cigars took inspiration from this rather decadent vacation spot when they blended this cigar. The West Hill Street cigar uses an Ecuadorian Habano wrapper, a binder from Indonesia, and filler tobacco that's part Dominican and part Nicaraguan, and includes the Nicaraguan tobacco includes leaves from Condega and Ometepe. Now, the pre-light notes were honey and hay with a hint of leather. I lit the cigar, not completely sure what to expect. There was no initial pepper blast, and to be honest, my first reaction to the West Hill Street was that it was kind of bland. Fortunately, some notes started to come through as it warmed up. I got roasted coffee beans, sort of a creamy sweetness, and oak in the first third. And right around the second third, a peppery spiciness started to develop on the tongue, which was nice. What was not so nice was that occasionally the finish had a sort of a burnt quality to it. Sort of like when somebody leaves the coffee pot in the kitchen at work on for too long.
I call that my mom's coffee.
And there's almost no coffee left. And you get that kind of Ian's mom's coffee smell emanating from the coffee maker. It wasn't quite enough to put me completely off the cigar, but I did notice it at times in the finish. The second third did bring in some chocolate notes and more earthiness. The final third added a leather note as well. Construction was okay, but not great. The West Hill Street started out burning unevenly down one side, making the ash crooked and making me worry that it was going to drop off onto my favorite hoodie. It wouldn't be the first time. At the beginning of the second third, I lopped off the ash and corrected the burn with my lighter, and it seemed to do okay for a while, and then it eventually started up the uneven burn again around the final third. It didn't ruin it for me, but still was kind of a pain. My overall reaction to the Grey Cliff West Hill Street Torpedo? Meh.
Meh.
It certainly wasn't a bad cigar, and I felt like it kept trying to show me interesting flavor notes, but the occasional sense of burnt coffee on the finish seemed to keep it from ever breaking out. I kept thinking, this is fine, but I wish I was smoking an Oliva or an AJ that I really like instead. The Grey Cliff West Hill Street Torpedo is about a $10 cigar. Price to quality? Four.
No.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Just not, I mean, if this were a $4 or $5 cigar, I'd have been pretty happy with it, I think. But at that price, nah, you can do so much better. All right, it is Beer 30. We're going to break into some True Anomaly Brewing beer in the next segment, and we're really excited about it. Our guest is award-winning brewer, Mr. Michael Duckworth from True Anomaly. Hey. And we'll be right back to talk about
awesome.
It. Our program is all about craft beer, fine spirits, and hand-rolled cigars. We've been talking a lot about cigars. Now we're going to get to the craft beer. Welcome back. It's Smoking and Toasting. You said you wanted to say something about Grey Cliff.
Grey Cliff is one of those companies. When they started off, I think they were very expensive cigars.
I think so, yes.
And then I used to get them a lot through Cigars International way back in the day. They used to be, they do a lot of specials on them. And there were quite a few of those. I used to, the G2 Turbo was like a go-to for me.
Right, that's a pretty good cigar, yeah.
And recently there's been a little resurgence of them. I've seen them on Cigar Page, Cigars International, places like that. But I feel like they're kind of a throw-in now.
Well, it's interesting because this one was part of a sampler pack that I bought.
Yeah.
I don't know that I would have like bought that specific one, but there were other things in the sampler pack I was excited about.
I've had a couple that I've had from the sample packs, and they're okay cigars. Mm-hmm. I kind of agree on the meh thing overall. They're okay cigars, but like at $10, no. As a throw-in, it's not a bad cigar, I think.
Well, and this should have been a better cigar, quite frankly, because of the where the tobacco was sourced from.
Yeah.
You know, you had... If you've got Nicaraguan tobacco in your car.
If you're sweeping it up off the factory floor, it still came from that factory.
Well, I suppose that's right. It may still be from Ometepe. It just was, yeah.
What was in the sampler that made you purchase?
I
caught your eye.
I want to say they had a couple of Olivas that I really liked.
If it was a Cigar Page, they have Olivas all the time. Yeah,
and
so good.
And it was there was also a couple of, I think there was an AJ that I hadn't tried in there, and I'm a big AJ fanboy. So, yeah, every now and then I stumble across one. It's amazing. And there was also an Encore for me, EP Carrillo. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, this is a pretty good looking sampler pack. So I'll go for it. So, but yeah, I like trying sampler packs because if they have a few things that I know I'm going to like, I like trying the other things that I might not have bought, like the Grey Cliff. I'm glad I tried it. And it wasn't like I said, it wasn't a bad cigar. It just didn't light me up like I was.
There's one that I get as a
stand on it.
There's one that I get as a throw in on some of those called Free Will. It's made by Drew Estate.
Yeah,
actually pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. You get some. Some of those are where I've discovered actually some of the better inexpensive cigars that I've found. Like it was one of those packs from I think Holtz that I found the Rocky Patel. One of the Mulligan series, but it's the one with the red band. It's like a $2 cigar, and it's unbelievably good. It's almost as good as a Rocky Patel Decade. So,
nice.
So that's been something I've gone back and then bought bundles of just to have. That's a good humidor stuffer, But anyway, for those of you who are not familiar with our price to quality scale, it is a 1 to 10 scale, but a 5 means you get what you paid for. Mm-hmm. So I gave that Grey Cliff a 4, which means, I thought it was essentially overpriced, which is something I've always kind of thought about Grey Cliffs, even the ones that I've really liked. But enough about that. Let's talk about beer. Michael Duckworth is here from True Anomaly Brewing. He's been on the show a number of times, including you were on our big 300th episode,
Which was
great.
Patio. That was
which
awesome.
Was great
that was
fun. We had that was one of those times when the show ended and then everybody just kind of hung out and kept drinking beer and smoking cigars and having a good time. So loved it. But Michael, you guys have been honored as the Texas Brewery of the Year for the second year in a row. And you really have such great beers. I've, obviously been over to the tap room since it's walking distance from my house, which is important. The walking part.
You were mentioning their Taco Tuesdays were pretty amazing. Part.
Yeah, they had Taco Tuesdays there. They had guys making up these tacos that were amazing. And, of course, when I can, walk home, that allows me to stay a little longer, if you understand what I'm saying, or not have to designate a driver. So I love coming over to your place. One of the things Ian was talking about, how you always have a number of Belgian-inspired beers on your big chalkboard there. You always have a lot of beers available, and you're now getting to where there's more and more of them released to retail. But I understand this first one that we're going to try was just released in cans for the first time?
Right. It was canned today. So, yeah,
I love that.
As fresh as it gets. It smells amazing.
Yeah. So this is a Goza. We've done this a number of occasions in the tap room. Haven't released it out to retail previously. It's 3.5% easy drinker. Obviously, we're getting into spring and summer. So this is a fan favorite and I would say a brewer's
favorite.
That
is so crisp and delicious.
It really is. Now, it's always a mixed bag for me when you do sours. Like, some of them I really like. Some of them, but Gozas are a different thing. These are tart, not sour.
Right.
Although, it's so tart, it's almost a little sour, right. But in a really good way.
But this is tart like a green apple. Like, it's got that snap and that clean finish. Mm-hmm. It's so good.
So, it's a traditional Berliner Weiss, right? So, it's a 2-day process, and we don't put any fruit in this. We do put coriander and sea salt. Mm-hmm. So
you can definitely taste the sea salt.
Right. So you're going to get a little quench in there. It's kind of nice. Mm-hmm. It's hydrating and dehydrating at the same time.
I was such a fan. I was such a fan for so long of St. Arnold's Boiler Room, which was a Berliner Weiss, which you used to could get in a bomber for like $5.
Yeah.
It was like, not only was it good, but it was really inexpensive. It wound up being discontinued, and then they morphed it into the Raspberry AF, which I don't think they make that anymore.
No, that's gone.
But this reminds me of what I liked about that. It's just so incredibly crisp and refreshing, and you get that green apple tartness, but you can pick up on the sea salt. It's just, wow.
And they're coming in at 3.5. How sessionable. Like,
it's about as sessionable as you can.
That's like, if you're
going
to be outside grilling or something that's a great way to go.
And so much better than, you know, if you were reaching for like a macro brew light. To get something like this that is lower in ABV but just has all this amazing taste. And what is the name of this, and what is the significance of the name? Because you guys always have great stories behind the names of your beers.
So this is an interesting one. This is Frederick's, and it's named after Frederick's notebook is what this is. So the style of Goza, actually, for a very brief period there, brief being 100 years or so, was a style that wasn't brewed anymore. It basically, they lost the recipe, if you will. It was during it was some wartime.
Fell out of favor, I guess.
Yeah, so it was during the Industrial Revolution and some turmoil over there in Europe. And as a result, they again kind of lost the recipe. And then this gentleman named Frederick found the recipe and started.
Oh, he was the guy that reinvigorated it.
Yeah, he reintroduced it, and that was a couple hundred years ago. And as a result, we still have this style as part of our repertoire because of Frederick, quite honestly.
Wow,
who went and dug it up and started brewing again.
Well,
so
thank you to Frederick this is I love this style, and it's really about this time, you know, March, April every year that I start. You know, sort of craving these lighter beer styles, these really refreshing, thirst-quenching styles. And this is a thirst quencher for sure.
Yep. And we got a nice lower ABV lager coming up. And then we're going to switch, flip the script on you and show you some
and
big
then
stuff.
Go to the dark side. Yeah. Okay.
It's cool. still cold somewhere, right?
Yeah, that's
so,
right. Well, and, you know, you're talking to Ian, my co-host here, who will drink.
I would drink a barley wine floating down the river. I'm fine with it. I have no problems
he's
with
not
that.
Kidding.
But
either.
How many of them?
You know, I think you'd be amazed how much you can do when you're sitting down.
It's the getting up that's hard. That's
the correct answer, Ian, to that question is, how long's the river?
Let me go ahead and point this out. Nobody is graceful getting in or out of an inner tube anyway. Like, if you've ever watched that process.
No one's going to know, is what you're saying. Yeah. Yeah. Well, with Ian, the big thing about his inner tubing trips are he takes something with a hugely obnoxious ABV, and he takes an enormous cigar that he's still smoking by the time he reaches the place to get out of the river.
Something starting in like the 7x70 range is what I'll generally bring. Yeah.
So he wants a monstrous beer and a monstrous cigar, and that's a river flow.
Start smoking in Austin and keep smoking by the time he gets to the Rio Grande. It's still going.
It's like, hey, the border's coming up. Oh, well, I still got some of my cigar left, so I'll
what's funny
I'm
is
trucking over here.
What's funny is when you're sitting down and chilling, that's a nice time to drink anything, really.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're up and moving around, like this is good. You know, you guys literally brew one of my favorite lighter beers. I say lighter, not in the fact that it's a light beer, but the Scout is one of my absolute go-to beers when I want something a little on the lighter side.
And is Scout an ongoing beer for you? Is that
so, yeah, so Scout's a little bit everywhere. It's probably one of our best movers, if you will. We got got gold for it just this past year at GABF.
It's so good.
I'm not surprised about any of those things. Yeah,
so it's a good mover for us. And again, it's a fan favorite. I think lagers and it's a lighter,
Mexican-style lager.
Yeah. The brewers in the back, you know, this is generally what the staff is drinking. You know, these 3.5%, 4%, you know, you're still got to work, you know.
It's never stopped Ian, but I know what you're trying to say.
I mean, as a musician, you would think, well, he probably doesn't drink at all when he's working.
Yeah, that's what you would think.
You know, when I was a club DJ,
I like the look on your faces. You guys need to watch the video for that one.
I feel like if you were in a church, maybe, yes.
There's a musical act out there that's not drinking, but
depends what church, I suppose.
Exactly.
That's 100%. Yeah, I know when I was a club DJ, I was always at my best mixing beats if I was a couple of beers in. And I mean that, too.
Yeah.
Now, if I was a dozen in, not so good. Give me a couple, you were loosened up, you were feeling the beat. It was.
It's like pool. You know, nobody's great until they've had a couple. Next thing you know, and then there's that arch. And
there's
then,
that drop off point. Yeah, that's for sure. Absolutely true. Well, this is wonderful. Now, this is commercially available, right? We can find this.
Again, we just canned it today. Next week or so, you'll see it.
Okay,
out
so it's not out yet, but coming.
Yeah, someplace.
So fresh, though. It does taste so good. That's fun to get the beer that was canned today.
Yeah.
Well, and with a style like Goza or with a lager or a pilsner, it's even more exciting to get it fresh, you know, because there's just something about those styles. The crispness is just a little more accentuated, I think, when it's this fresh. I bet this is great on the tap in the the tap room.
Oh, it's great on the tap, and quite honestly, I mean, it's great for snacks. So you know, for that little sea salt in there just
makes you want.
It's almost a snack in itself.
Taco
you know? You
Tuesday,
come back
here
to
I
it,
come,
you know?
Man.
I need that little salt in there. Yeah.
Oh yeah. I was there last time for Taco Tuesday, but do you guys always have food truck? Are guys there doing stuff?
We'd rotate in and out, mainly on the weekends. We also, you know, partner with some of the other guys in the neighborhood. We've got
you're across the street from an outrageously good pizza place.
So Vinny's across the street, and we do a lot of business with those guys. And we got the burger joint Rodeo Goat catty corner from us. So we're good friends over there with all those guys. Yeah, we're actually bringing in a kitchen.
Rodeo Goat's pretty good,
About 2 months, we're actually
bringing your own kitchen.
Oh, wow.
Right. I mean, it's going to be paninis, charcuterie, flatbread type stuff.
Still.
But yeah, giving some food options out
good
there.
Flatbread is great with beer, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Agreed.
Love it.
Agreed.
Love it.
We saw what Vinny's was doing. And we said, hey, well, we should be doing something.
How much have you guys grown in terms of your distribution in the last couple of years? Because when you win an award like this, you would think it would help open some doors in other Texas cities, for example, for you to be able to get the beer distributed and carried. Is that a thing?
Yeah, it certainly is. We've you know, gotten our foot into the Austin market a little bit. We'll go out there a few times a year, do a big drop. We're talking to some distributors on you know, getting outside the Houston area, but quite frankly, the Houston area is very deep well, if you will.
So you can sell a lot of beer in the Houston area, is what
I'm saying. And we've just scratched the surface. We're, you know, five-plus years in. Obviously, we've gotten a few accolades and some recognition, which is certainly helping things out.
Mm-hmm.
But we still self-distribute. We're still pretty small. So at the end of the day, you know, we're having to put in the elbow grease to get into the HEBs and Total Wine and whatever have you. So hopefully over the next year or two, we're really going to expand production, which is going to give us a better footing to be able to get more beer out there. And as our reputation has grown, it's allowed us to, you know, get into more shelf space.
If you had to kind of put a finger on what it is about your beers that got you this award for two consecutive years, what do you think it is? I mean, obviously you've got good beer, but there's a lot of places with good beer. Like, what do you think made your beers exceptional enough that it put you in a position to really be able to run away with this award?
Sure. So, I mean, I think you already said quality is number one. We really, really, you know, focus on education from our brewer's perspective. And I think the commitment and the fun that they're having in brewing a lot of these different styles of beers. Ian was saying earlier, you know, we have a number of Belgians that we usually carry, Saisons. We do these barrel-age, you know, long-term projects that, you know, for a typical brew house, you know, generally speaking, you've got one, two flagships, and you're just turning that beer
Right. You know, you're making as much of that as you can because that's where most of your revenue comes from.
And that job gets a little tedious, right? Yeah. And your excitement about it maybe, flattens out a little bit. But for us, we've got a lot of different special projects going on that keep our brewers, excited about what we're putting out. Just like you guys, oh, hey, we've never done this. We brewed it, but now we're putting it back in. We're putting it out to retail. Yeah. They get to see more of mine.
You guys keep a lot of taps active up there. And then even beyond that, you have a cooler off to the side of the bar that has a lot of your more aged stuff, can and crowlers and
right, and all the bottle conditioned stuff. All that wood age stuff is getting bottle conditioned. Yeah, we try to keep a healthy mix in there, and at the end of the day, ensure that again.
I had a Fooder aged saison that was in my fridge.
Nice.
I drank that I think about a month ago.
All right, we're gonna have another one today.
So good. Yeah. So good. Awesome. And it had been sitting in there aging, just thinking about it for like a year.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love it. That's what's great about it. The shelf life on it really continues more like wine. And, again, we're going to skip into this wine conversation here in a little bit, too. So.
All right. Cool.
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
All right. There's a lot of interesting things going on at True Anomaly Brewing. And the beers are obviously something Ian and I have both been huge fans of for quite some time. And I'm always excited because the little store downstairs in my building always has three or four True Anomalies lined up in a row. Right. And so it makes it really easy to grab one of those every now and then and just really kind of treat yourself. That's what I love to do. All right, we'll be right back. It's Smoking and Toasting. More beers to sample. Plus, at some point, we're going to get into this Henry McKenna 10-year bottled and bond bourbon that Ian has brought along with him. Plus, drinking news still to come. It's Smoking and Toasting. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Smoking and Toasting. Our show is all about craft beer, fine spirits, and hand-rolled cigars. Speaking of hand-rolled cigars, one to watch for, La Aurora is debuting their vintage series, La Aurora Puro Vintage 2014. They do an annual series of releases that began 16 years ago, and this year's is a Salomon. It's 6.5-inch long figurado with a 60-inch ring gauge at the fattest point, but it's one of those that, kind of slopes and tapers. Yeah, it has a suggested retail price of $26.50. Comes in boxes of 8, but it's limited to only 1,000 boxes, and it starts shipping the middle of next month. Wow. And it's really pretty. I mean, look it up online. It is absolutely
$26 a piece.
$26.50 a piece is the suggested retail, and that's a lot for a La Aurora. They usually, I think, they top out usually around $20 at the those ones that come in the metal tubes that are tapered at both ends. You know what I'm talking about?
I'm trying to remember the name of the series. There's a gold one and a red one.
And a red one, yes, yeah. Exactly. I think there's a black one, too. Which is,
okay.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, check that one out if you're a La Aurora fan. They have done some fabulous work on cigars in the past.
I don't know of a La Aurora cigar that I don't like.
Yeah, you're 100% right. And a lot of their cigars are Dominican tobacco, and I think they are one of the better of the Dominican-oriented cigar companies that is out there. Michael Duckworth from True Anomaly Brewing, award-winning Texas brewery for two consecutive years, is with us, and he has brought a big bottle of something or other with you. Yeah.
Yeah, this is a White Dwarf.
So is this a bottle-conditioned beer?
It is, yeah. This is a Saison that's been re-fermented with Gewürztraminer grapes.
Ooh, and I like Gewürztraminer wine. It's just this super crisp and thirst-quenching sort of a
for those less familiar with it, it's like a...
Hey, I didn't know what any of those words were. I was going to say, I don't know what any of those words were.
Like a crisp Riesling, if you will. It's a more traditional German Riesling.
It's sort of like Farfignugen. You're not sure if it's a real word or if the Germans just made it up, right? But Gewürztraminer, it's a type of grape, right?
It is, it is. Okay. Right. So we did a pairing of these with the Malbec grapes as well. So we have a Red Giant, White Dwarf. And this one, White Dwarf, got gold at the Texas Craft Brewers Cup.
This is really good.
So is this a sparkling wine or a beer?
Technically, it's a beer. It's just got some grapes that we fermented.
But it's so grapey. It's like the finish on it.
Yeah. Oh. I like it.
This is one where you almost feel like when you're drinking it, you should put the pinky up.
Exactly. Yeah.
It seems fancy. Yes.
It makes it a little too quaffable as well. You really get through it. It's like a little juicy,
And speaking of quaffable, what is the ABV on this?
Not quaffable.
Be careful.
7.5%. So I mean, you know, for wine standards, like that's like an half IPA.
Not like an IPA. So
yeah.
It's, I love the sparkles in this. The bubbles are small, and they're not too much.
Am I getting coriander? Is that the spice I'm getting?
So I do think there's a little taste of that in there. We didn't put any coriander in there. Just grape saison. This was fooder aged as well, so you're going to get a little bit of oak characteristic in there. But overall, it's a it is a melding of the worlds.
It's an interesting. There's an astringentness to it that that just leaves your mouth like. Wanting more.
The Doritos effect. Yes, it's definitely there.
Yeah. It's so good. It's sour, but it's sour in such a gentle and
I just want to say
if
you're a little put off by saisons and farmhouse ales, this is a good one to try because it is got so much of that grape flavor to it that
the funk is definitely tamed by the grape.
On the tasty notes there, funky. We have a little lychee, little apricot, honeysuckle. I think the honeysuckle is that last little taste that you're leaving you.
It's good. It's very accessible though, as saisons go.
If you let it sit on your palate for just a minute. There's a spice underlying this too that is unexpected.
Like, 100%.
That's the saison. So saison always has a little peppercorn element to it. That's gonna jazz it up, I think.
So I always think of the funky stuff when I think saison, but that spice.
Farmhouse, yeah. So saison is just depending on how it's fermented, but it's always generally going to give you a little bit of a pepper characteristic. That's the yeast itself, right?
Some of that good old funky stuff, as Dr. Dre said.
We want the funk.
Yeah. Well, this is really delicious, and this strikes me as the perfect kind of a bottle that you want to open and share. You got a couple of friends over, you want to sit down, you want to taste it, you want to talk about it.
Perfect.
Kind of like wine snobs, except it's really beer.
Right. But, better and cheaper. So going for you.
And just every bit is delicious, if not more so. I mean, depending on what you like. I mean, I could see, I recently watched Sideways. I could see Paul Giamatti's character in Sideways enjoying this. Mm-hmm. I really could.
And he was gum?
Definitely. Yeah, that's great. That's like the greatest line. And when he goes, I am not drinking effing Merlot. That's great. I really enjoyed that movie. And for whatever reason, I'd never seen it. Like back when it came out, it was all the rage. I haven't seen it. It's worth watching.
It's worth it.
You guys just gave the whole thing away. No, totally spoiled it for me.
Yeah, and in the end, he dies
tragically.
Yeah, tragically. It's horrible. You've heard of train tracks, right? that's where it's going. But honestly, this is a very good beer. And just to get back to something, so many of your beers are named with space themed names, and I love that this one is White Dwarf. It just seems the name fits the flavor and the taste of the beer very, very
well. Thank you very much. And we work hard on these things.
What did you say the other one is?
Red Giant.
So Red Giant. The
cycle of a star.
You've had those for a while, right?
So we release those right before the holidays, and we have them in gift packs. Actually, the packaging is very nice on it. We probably only have less than a dozen of these things available. So
I'm just checking on my time with Terry. I don't know where we're at, but it looks like we're maybe over.
No, I lost. I thought we were on segment four, but we're on segment one of the second hour, so we're good.
Oh, we are.
I think.
I thought it was segment four. This is behind the scenes stuff that you.
Well,
that
how
you
about we just make this segment one, and then we'll do segment four in just a moment.
Yeah, because that would really, really confuse me.
Maybe we do segment four back to back.
Segment four is the final segment for the hour that...
Nope, you're right. Yep. This is it. Yep, this is. Okay. Yeah. Let me play some music and we'll wrap it up.
Are we over time here?
We're over.
That means people are never going to know if this beer was good or not.
Well, they'll know for the most part because we started right into it.
Yeah, all right. Well, we'll take a break and be back after we sort out this time travel that we'll have to do to figure this out. It's Smoking and Toasting. Welcome back. It's Smoking and Toasting. Our show is all about craft beer, fine spirits, and hand-rolled cigars.
Love that.
We are into hour two of the show. We have drinking news coming up. Michael Duckworth is our guest from True Anomaly Brewing, a Texas Brewery of the Year award winner for two consecutive years, which we are excited.
Awesome.
Here in Houston, we're excited when one of ours gets recognized. And plus, we feel a little extra like ownership, if you will, of the of the coolness of True Anomaly, because we've had Michael on the show a number of times and been to his establishment and you know, hopefully didn't embarrass ourselves there. And just, you know, it's this feels like one of ours. And so
I always ask
awesome.
If he's at the brewery. Yeah. He's never there when I'm there. So that's when I go ahead and just get hammered and don't care.
You make a scene.
I'm like, he's not here? Awesome.
Yeah. And then,
I want two of those.
And when you leave, just tell him Christopher Hart was here.
That's right.
And then you
that's why we check the tapes going. The next
yeah,
day.
That's
tell him Cruz stop
smart
by.
Of you to do. Yeah. So there are a couple of websites that we recommend highly to people who are into beers and spirits. And one of them is
Liquor.com. Do they end with the name Hub?
Those are other websites we recommend for different reasons. But no, liquor.com is one of them. Another one that we really like is VinePair. VinePair has put out some very excellent articles. I stumbled across this one from VinePair where they talk about the 30 best bourbons for 2024. So, Ian, I thought we'd maybe run through a few of these.
That's a big list.
And see what you think. So they start with the best bourbon under $25. And they mentioned Benchmark Bonded. Any thoughts about that?
Benchmark Bonded is pretty solid. When we did our bottom shelf blind taste test, Benchmark 8 and Benchmark there was another one there. I can't remember which one it was, but both of them scored pretty well on it.
They also mentioned the Early Times Bottled in Bond.
Early Times is fine.
Average price $25. Rating of 88.
Old Crow, not so good. Early Times, just fine.
How about Wild Turkey 101?
Wild Turkey 101 is one of my favorite whiskeys in existence.
Average price, $25 a bottle.
It's fantastic.
Yeah. Larceny Small Batch Bourbon Whiskey.
I've had it.
Seven Hills Entry Level Wheated Bourbon. $25 bottle again, and they rated it an 88. So
I like Wild Turkey better.
George Dickel Bourbon Whiskey, aged 8 years.
There's nothing wrong with George Dickel.
$33 price tag.
Nothing wrong with that. And you get the bourbon.
How about Knob Creek's 9-year-old bourbon whiskey?
Knob Creek is pretty nice. Although
$37 bottle.
Substantially. It's not as much more as I thought.
Okay. And then here's one I can attest to for real, because this is one I try to almost always keep a bottle of in the bar. It's Maker's Mark 46.
Just bought a bottle of that the other day.
It's just so, like, it's so reliably good. You know what I mean? $42 is the average price for that bottle, and they rated it a 91. Then you got Town Branch True Cask Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey.
I don't know any of those words.
not even whiskey?
No.
It's a $44 bottle, and they say for the second year running, Town Branch impressed them with its somewhat tame 54.3% ABV, cask strength, true cask release. They go on to actually say it's quite enjoyable. So, again, check this out at VinePair. It's a very interesting article. New Riff Distilling, Bottled in Bond, Kentucky Straight Bourbon. I am not familiar with New Riff. Are you?
I got some on my shelf.
Do you? Do you really?
Yeah, I can threaten to bring it in here if you'd like.
I always think of, what is it, the tricky song, New Configuration, New Riff, and New Structure. maybe I don't know what I'm talking about. Probably not.
You went tricky on us.
Yeah, I did. it's tricky.
It's actually really good. I'll bring it in for review on one of the shows.
It's tricky to rock a rhyme.
To rock a rhyme that's right on time?
Yeah, right on time, yeah.
Tricky.
Best bourbons under $100. They point out Shelter Distilling's Small Batch Blue Corn Bourbon. Are you familiar?
For who?
Shelter Distilling.
Don't know Shelter.
No, yeah, there's that other blue corn that everybody
Yeah, Balcones makes the blue corn.
Yeah, that's what everybody knows Balcones.
Quite good. $50 price tag, 91 on the rating. Smooth Ambler Old Scout 7-year-old straight bourbon whiskey. It's a $51 bottle.
Don't know anything about that one.
Yeah, okay. I've seen this one at least. I have not drank it. I've seen it. I do know this one, and I would concur with it being on this list. The Four Roses Small Batch Select.
Small Batch, real good.
That is just really good. It's a $60 bottle. They rated it a 92. Wilderness Trail High Rye Bourbon Bottle.
Seen
Bond.
It. Haven't tried
it. Yeah, I have not had that one either. We'll have to get a bottle of that and get it on the show. It's a $53 bottle. And, of course, Woodford Reserve Double Oaked. Now,
that's so good.
That's just true. Really a so great, good. Great bourbon.
So that's my go-to. We always have it in.
It's a $60 bottle. We did this one on the show, I believe, Ian, I don't know, maybe middle of last year or so, the rabbit hole High Gold.
Yes.
I was
Kentucky
here.
Straight Bourbon.
I was
you were here
for
that
one. Yeah, yeah. We had that together.
It was really
good. Oh, you went home with the bottle.
I think I went home with the bottle. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
Do you have any of it left? Just out of curiosity.
No. Are you kidding me?
1792 full proof. Bottled at 62.5% ABV. It's a $60 bottle. We rated it a 91.
1792 is pretty good whiskey. Yeah.
5 and 20 spirits deep water bourbon. I'm not familiar with this one at all. So that again, find
deep water.
Find this article because you may find some things you want to seek out and try here.
It's on Vinepair, right?
On Vinepair, yes, yeah. Vinepair.com. Milam and Green, very small batch 2. Now we've had some Milam and Green on the show, and I still have some of it in my bar.
Batch 2.
Yeah, I don't think it was batch 2.
Yeah, the Milam and Green was pretty nice.
That's a $70 bottle. I think the one I bought was more like a $30 or $40 bottle. Elijah Craig Barrel Proof Bourbon Batch C 923.
I don't know if it's batch C, but I got some on my shelf.
I had that this week.
I have,
batch C.
So good.
I have some of that left as well. Unfortunately,
the barrel proof or the full proof? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, don't have any of the Eagle Rare. That's gone. We talked about that last week.
I got
week.
One bottle of that left.
Buzzard's Roost Sipping Whiskey Toasted American Oak Bourbon, batch number 2. I'm completely unfamiliar.
Lost on that one.
So these are ones to try.
Yeah, we're going to have to look at this list and pick some out.
Yeah, so Vine Pear. It's a $75 bottle, and they rated a 91. Fry Ranch Distillery Farm Strength Uncut. You familiar with Fry Ranch or Fry Ranch? I think it's Fry is how you pronounce it. I'm going to pronounce it like Glenn Fry until somebody tells me otherwise.
I might have misheard. Did you say Farm Strength?
It says
Farm Strength.
Fry Ranch Distillery Farm Strength Uncut.
Yeah, there he is.
Well, okay.
Batch 10.
I didn't even catch that.
It's enough to
farm strength.
It's enough to take down a farmer. Is what that means. Yeah, 2 sips and the farmer's out for the night.
A little bit in the cow, and she'll be still for all the milking you need.
Doc Swinson's Whiskey Exploratory Cask Pinot.
Have heard of him.
Yeah, I've had Doc Swinson's. I don't think I've had the Exploratory Cask. Barrel Bourbon's New Year 2024.
I never know what barrel bourbon I'm drinking because every single bottle is different.
They look the same. They just
bottle.
Have little scribbles on them that differentiate them somehow.
And they're all $92.
Although I have a barrel rum, by the way, that's like something like a 136 proof or something ridiculous amount.
They've got some that are just
It will
way...
actually just catch on fire if you're smoking near it.
It's like, hey, burn.
It tastes good, though.
Is that one of those flaming cocktails? No, I just got my cigar too close to the barrel bourbon. Booker's Bourbon Mighty Fine Batch 2023-03.
Booker's.
Listen, you can't go wrong with anything that says Booker's on it, honestly. It's just...
Booker's.
Just too good. This was the third Booker's release from 2023, and they say it is quite deserving of its Mighty Fine name. It's a $90 bottle. Old Elk Cognac Cask Finish Bourbon. I'm not familiar with this one.
Don't know that one.
All right. So they bring that one in as a $90 bottle, give it a 92. And now for the best bourbons over $100.
Oh.
Or otherwise known as A Guy Can Dream. the Blue Run Spirits Reflection 2, which has a silver butterfly embossed on the bottle. I'm not familiar. But see, I'm going to be less familiar with a lot of these over 100, right? Old Forester 1924 Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey, the newest addition to the Old Forester Whiskey Row series.
You know, it's 115, you know, Trey over at the rail yard is going to have that on the shelf.
All right, well, we need to go and visit Trey very soon. Bardstown Bourbon Company Discovery Series number 11.
I haven't had that particular bottle.
Looks pretty cool, though. $140. Heaven Hill Heritage Collection 18-year-old bourbon.
Man, they've had Heaven Hill. I'm not even going to say it. They've had the bottle and bond in stock. It's Free Places, so.
Okay.
Not that one.
But Well, this one's $300, so.
It might still be there.
Yeah, it might still be. Exactly. Russell's Reserve Single Rickhouse Camp Nelson F.
Oh. Have not tried that.
It's a $300 bottle as well. They rated it a 96.
I feel like I'm not even going to bother saying haven't tried that for most of these.
Are we running out of ways to name things?
I think we probably.
Series F, C392, C3PO showed up there.
I could ask you guys this question because you always seem to come up with really creative names for all of your new beers.
Yeah,
because
there's plenty of them out there. So I don't know if...
so you don't understand
I think
this
you should just start saying Series A, B, C. Just start doing it that way. anyway, speaking of beers from True Anomaly, this is the El Comandante. Is it El Comandante or Comandante?
Comandante.
Comandante. It's a Spanish lager. So first of all, how is a Spanish lager different from a Mexican lager? Because you guys already have Scout, which we've talked about, right, which is fabulous.
So interesting
it's
enough.
A little redder in color.
Yeah, so this is a collaboration we did with Axiom, and specifically Mike L.A., who was the crew commander for AX3. So you'll see his mug on the can there.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a very distinctive looking gentleman.
So he's the commander, you know? So it's El Comandante.
I was
going
to say, if he told me to do something, I think I wouldn't question it. I'd just go ahead and do it.
And I think he's like 76, so you don't know it. But
really?
Wow. Yeah, he's doing great. I don't know. I've probably missed Houston. He's going to be upset about that later.
But so, did he like fly the space shuttle? Or
he did, yeah. So he was a pilot for the shuttle program. He's been on a couple of Axiom flights. He's a retired NASA astronaut, now doing private missions, which is a new thing, right? So
so what does that mean? Like SpaceX could hire him to take a payload up to a satellite or something?
100%. Yeah. Wow. So Axiom, so cool. Here, local Houston company, they're working on their own space flight stuff, and they've got some missions going on, all private, and we've been working with them on a couple other projects. This is one that Mike came in. He's from Madrid, said, hey, in Madrid and up and down Spain, they have, a lager that's pretty local to the regions.
Oh, so interesting. So this really is a Spanish lager, in Spain.
Can you help me figure out how to make that? How to do that? So we did some research, looked at the hops. So this has some hops that are more local to the area, the region there. Which are a little bit more floral. You'll pick that out on the taste.
It's floral, and it's a little more bitter up front versus in the back of the flavor, too.
Right. And otherwise, again, I think it's a 4.5% easy drinker. Yeah, yeah. Very, very light in character.
All right, another one of this. We had this. He actually bought a can of it and brought it on the show. Ooh.
Maybe a month ago.
Yeah, a while
much
back.
Much longer than that.
We enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's really good. Now, I would be hard-pressed to choose it over Scout just because I love Scout so much.
Scout's
but this
so
is
good.
So interesting and different, even though it's in the same family. Maybe,
it is. It's definitely the same family. What's unique is obviously we did this as an intended one-off kind of with Axiom and those guys, but it's really done well. It's been, it's really not pulling away from Scout, which is a Mexican-style lager, and we have a Spanish lager.
If you've
lager
ever had any Italian beers like Peroni or some of those, it has a little more of that kind of crispiness.
Which makes sense when you think Spain as in European as opposed to Mexican as in, South American, right?
Right.
So it does make sense that it would have some things. It just occurred to me, you're in a really unique position with people talking about, taking private citizens into space, like as becoming a thing.
Yeah, my name's on the list. I'm telling you.
Well, and you could like talk to some of these guys and go, I could make it worth your while in beer if I'm on the list.
I don't know how much we have to trade, but we're starting to set some aside
now. Very good. Very good. I like it. All right, we got to take a break. We will be. If William Shatner can go to space, I think Michael Duckworth
can go
to space.
You're going to have to put beer in little squeeze things, right?
We'll be right back. It's Smoking and Toasting.
Dehydrate. Yeah.
Welcome back. It's Smoking and Toasting. Our program is all about craft beer, fine spirits, and hand-rolled cigars. We're going to get into the fine spirits as Ian is opening up the bottle of Henry McKenna 10-year bottled and bond bourbon. And while he's pouring that, Michael, I wanted to ask you about something. I read an article recently that basically implied that craft brewers were kind of getting bored with doing hazy IPAs. And I wanted to talk to you about that because obviously you guys do, not one, but several fantastic hazies. And I just wondered, is that true? Are your brewers, are they kind of like less interested in that because it's become so ubiquitous and now they're, more interested in just doing the, the Saisons and the other, more off the beaten path type things?
I would say that's probably a little more on point than it is. Yeah,
really? So, that the brewers really are kind of,
I would
kind
say
of
it's
saying,
one of their less favorite.
Interesting.
I would think IPAs in general, people would be just tired of making.
Yeah, I think so. The
I'm sure
the
tired of drinking them though.
Yeah, yeah. The process of a hazy is there's the dry hopping, right? So that's what gives it all that really punched up hop character. And the amount of hops that you're messing with, getting them out of solution and getting the trub out, it's just a bigger pain in the ass, quite honestly.
So
that's generally where brewers, you know, and again, you're turning these beers, right? So you're making mass volume because they're pushing out a little bit more.
So you know is what's left over after you have the mash.
So if I come to True Anomaly, and I want to make sure the brewers know how much I appreciate you guys' hazies because they're so good, do I do a better job of showing that appreciation by ordering one of them? Or do I do a better job by ordering maybe something more exotic that the brewers had real fun doing? Like, which one is more encouraging to them?
So I would order three of them and all the hazies and just to let them know to get back to work and quit their fussing.
Suck it up, Buttercup.
That's what I'm thinking.
I mean, we brew a lot of different things. So, you know, they're not getting pigeonholed for our thing, but I know... You know, there are a lot of breweries that, you know, maybe put out a lot of IPAs.
Time to make the donuts.
Well, if you think of something like Sierra Nevada, for years their Sierra Nevada Pale Ale, which is still a fantastic beer, that was their flagship. And it got completely eclipsed when they came out with the Hazy Little Thing. That became their bestseller. So it's, look, St. Arnold, Artcar is their bestseller. They started out with the Amber.
Now their flagship.
Now their flagship. So, all right, we have a fairly short segment going here, so I wanted to get to the bourbon. Ian, what can you tell us about this Henry McKenna?
Well,
other than it's wonderful on the
age 10 years, bottled in bonds, single barrel. For those of you who don't know, bottled bond is product of one distillation season, stored in a federally U.S. bonded warehouse under government supervision for at least 4 years, bottled at 100 proof.
Ordinarily, I kind of want the government to stay out of stuff, but in this case, I just have to say, bravo, government.
You know, this is delicious. When I was at the Angel's Envy Distillery, the guy pointed out, he said, man, if you find something that's bottled in bond, it doesn't matter what shelf it's on. It's probably good whiskey.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I found that to be 100% true. But you find something like this that they go the extra mile and do the bottle and bond on it. And Henry McKenna can sell it on his name all day long. I mean, I'll buy Henry McKenna. But this is that extra step, that bottled and bond. And this is just one of those rarer bottles that's a little harder to find.
Well, this has a wonderfully approachable flavor palette, though. It's just like, it's really... For a bottled and bond bourbon, this is very
How sweet easy to is drink. It on the it's nose?
Very yes. much so. And you get a little of that sweetness in the middle of the palate, too, along with some corn and some of those oaky notes that you get from a really, really good bourbon.
A little bit of spice in there, too. Mm-hmm. This is an outrageously good whiskey. It's a little overproof, 50%. So coming in at 100 proof.
A little overproof, but it doesn't smack you when you drink it.
And that little spice, I think, helps out.
Yeah, I do too.
10-year-old single barrel is a one-of-a-kind bourbon and one of the few bottled and bond products available. So
we're going to continue to talk about this, and I have a feeling we may have some interesting back and forth with this and Michael's final beer when we come up against that. Plus,
smells so good.
Drinking news is next, my friends. You are watching and listening to Smokin' and Toastin'. Welcome back. It's Smokin' and Toastin'. Our program's all about craft beer, fine spirits, and hand-rolled cigars. Very much enjoying both the Henry McKenna Bottled and Bond and this wonderful creation from True Anomaly. What is the word again?
Affogato.
Affogato. And can people who are in the
Affogato, you forgotto.
Yeah. You say affogato, I say affogato. So can people in the Houston area find this in retail?
Yeah, so we'll have it out starting, I believe, next week out at the HEB Total Wine.
And you have it at the brewery, too, right?
And we have it very much.
So what is this one going to hit
the
shelf price-wise? And we have a
very limited supply in drafts. So if you come in the next few weeks.
Oh, you have it on draft.
We will have it in draft in the next week, yeah. So we have literally, I guess, six or two.
What time do you guys open?
For you, Chris. So this will end up being about $15-16 on the shelf. You'll see it across the market, both inside and then.
I love it.
It is so good. It is so worth every penny of that.
I love it. Thinking about opening time at True Anomaly. The first people who are waiting to get in, they open the doors, they walk in, they see Ian and me sitting at the bar completely hammered with glasses of this in front of us.
Of this chocolate milkshake I'm drinking.
I've only had four beers.
Yeah, that's right. Honestly, this is one of the more remarkable stouts we've had on this program. And quite frankly, we've had a lot of stouts on this show.
Thank you very much.
And so this is a reminder of why Texas Brewery of the Year makes so much sense for you guys. Because stout isn't even your thing. You know what I mean? Like I don't think of True Anomaly as a place that necessarily specializes in these big beers, these stouts and porters and barley wines and things like that. I know Ian's been all over you guys to try and do a barley wine. You think there's a chance you will?
I'm sure there is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we always push into
toasting barley wine.
There we go.
Smoking and toasting river floating barley wine. I'm all over it.
we can totally call it the river floater.
The river wine.
Yeah.
Barley style.
But yeah, I like it. Well, congratulations on winning this award 2 years.
Thank you very much.
Were you surprised, honestly?
100%. Yeah. I mean, you think you do good stuff, right? And you put your best foot forward. And obviously, last year we were just as surprised. You know, I mean, the year before that, you know, we came away with a couple awards, but nothing, you know, getting to that next level, if you will. And last year, you know, we really kind of surprised ourselves in the success that we had and the beers that we were putting out. And, you know, coming off of that, this year, you know, we submitted what, you know, it's all based on the brews that you put in and
sure.
you know, what they win, and you get points off that. But you know, we submitted a wide collection that we were very proud of, but you know, it's all based on the judges, and judging is very subjective, and we try to make it objective, but at the end of the day, you know, you can't, there's nothing's guaranteed. Nothing's, for sure. And for us to come away and have that second win, surely put a little pep in the step. And for our brewers themselves, we were talking about
this before.
You know, I mean, they're you know, that kind of like, good job. Awesome. Like, I'm doing it, you know, like, and whatever.
Did they ask for raises?
Shh, what are you doing?
Put
them in ideas. They didn't think about it yet.
Well, I know when we have a particularly good show, I try to make sure we send Terry home with some beers or spirits or something, just so he doesn't ask for the raise.
Maybe you give him this one. I don't know. We have one more in there. I feel like Ian was going to fight you for it. Yeah. But
there may be a thumb wrestling match.
Arm wrestles ahead of us.
Seriously, though, congratulations. I mean, these awards are really great. I know it's difficult to pin down exactly why you win, but there's no question that you don't win.
I'll tell you exactly why they win. Because of this.
Yeah, but exactly.
This is amazing.
That's what I'm saying. Because these beers are amazing.
How many beers do y'all make total?
We've brewed over 100 beers in the past 5 years.
Wow.
So we have about, you know, a half dozen or so that are in the market consistently, and then everything else just rotates.
And, wow. And I'll just say, I know we have listeners and viewers from all over the world, but if you happen to be in the Houston area, come out and discover why True Anomaly is the place that won this award 2 years ago.
True Anomaly is a cool place to hang. That whole area is really fun to walk around if you're looking for a place in Houston. Mm-hmm. Park somewhere near there or Uber there, and then you could just walk around. There's all kinds of great food.
Right.
True Anomaly's there.
And I'm generally there unless Ian and Cruz show up.
That's true.
Right. It's amazing. In which case, he's never there. I don't understand that.
He's never there when I tell him.
Who's tipping you off? That's what I'm wondering.
He's got a back door. He sees your car pull up.
Yeah. I'm just saying. I even try like coming
nobody can
in
recognize
Uber.
My truck.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
My truck is green, by the way. Yeah.
And not just green, neon green.
Yes.
Right here
from space.
Did you work for True Anomaly before? Is that what happened?
Since I bought my very green truck, I haven't lost it in a parking lot.
In fact, I think one of your next space themed beers should be called "I Can See Ian's Truck from Here." Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for being a part of Smoking and Toasting number 370. Thanks to Michael Duckworth from True Anomaly Brewing. Thanks for all you do and brew, and thanks for being on the program. Until we meet again, my friends, with show number 371. We like to say cheers,
y'all.
Yeah, you never listen to what anybody else says. Such a stubborn one, I think.